You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel, my first mate, Chris Johnson. We are the only father and son duo. Tandem in the history.
Is there more? Is there another thing to a father and son? Is there a trio to a father and son? MJ, I mean, come on, man.
Don't interrupt my flow, please. My only father and son duo to win a national championship at the same school in the history of the NBA. So I got to always throw that out there. And man, we are so excited. The man that keeps my second son gainfully employed. One of the top podcasts in the history of podcasts. No question.
I mean,
in terms of just total entertainment value, nothing approaches.
One of the greatest shows of all time.
No
bro.
Chill.
Bar
no,
none.
We're not just blowing smoke. Well, we are just a little bit, but we're sincere about it. Gilbert Arenas, Gil, welcome to Here District, man. We appreciate you.
GA, what up, baby?
Thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. How did you and Josiah hook up? I was thinking about that. How did you guys hook up? Was it an intermediary? Did you know it? Did you know each other a little bit?
It's a funny one because when I was with Fubo, we were looking for a new host. So I got a list of names, right? And then when I came across Josiah, I was like, man, why does he look so familiar? I couldn't place the face. Yeah. But I was like, I know him from somewhere. So while I'm looking at the phone, he's doing his little run walk. I leave the community and he's doing his little run walk. And I'm like, hey, rolls down on the, hey, yo, is this you?
Yes.
And he was like, yeah. I was like, yo, we're supposed to be having an interview, right? Yo, and then I was like, yo, can we have a conversation? Can you come by the house? And I was like, I see him running every day.
Yeah.
Wow.
Outside the community. And I was like, oh, so we end up having a conversation. I was like, yeah, you're the guy.
Yeah. I appreciate it, man. Chris, you had something?
No. I was just making it clear. Like, they live in the same community. Gil just randomly happened to run into Joe after seeing the list. I mean, that is serendipity to its finest.
Yeah. That is something. And Gil, as I mentioned, Chris and I, you know, UCLA connection. Now, so I'm looking up. Like all-time great Arizona players. Now, first of all, let me say this: when Chris, the first time his name came on my radar, and I shared this with him on his show, but I used to see his name in the paper all the time in high school. Arenas, 35 points. Arenas, 37 points. Arenas,
Latino. 30. You thought it was a Latino?
I thought he was a Mexican. I'm like this little Mexican out in Pacoima, wherever Grant. They got a Mexican in Pacoima that's live. But then when I found out that Lute Olson had signed the Mexican, I was like, dang, Lute had signed the Mexican to play in Arizona. That's so I'm reading. I just Google, you know how reliable, unreliable Google can be, but all time Arizona greats. And I see a bunch of names on there. I mean, I see Sean Elliott. I'm trying to figure out who's the best player in Arizona history. I see Sean Elliott. I see Mike Bibby, Richard Jefferson, Chase Buttinger, Luke Walton, Damon Stoudemire, Josiah's favorite. I mean, Salim Stoudemire. Josiah's favorites on there, Miles Simon, who Chris played with in AAU ball, Chris Mills. Your name is not on there, man. What happened?
You're looking at the bottom. Now you got to start at the top.
But this is
the bottom. It's somewhere at the top.
No, but it should be. That's my point. I don't understand. I mean, did you leave Arizona on good terms, on okay terms? How did you and Luke get along in Arizona?
Oh, no. I was, you know, I left after 2 years.
Right.
I think I was one of the only – I think there's only was like three of us that got to 1,000 points within our first 2 years. I was him.
Yeah. Well, I saw you averaged 15 as a freshman. You were on first team all-conference as a sophomore. I'm like, well, you know, I thought maybe you were a slow starter. You just decided to bolt after not being super productive, even though I remember seeing you and how good you were. But anyway, that was just –
We left on good terms. There was nothing there. Like amongst – us and the community, I was probably one of the best players that played there.
Yeah.
I wasn't there long. So, you know, most of the people that Damon stayed with 3 years, Ryan Elliott 4, right? You're talking about, you know, maybe won a championship. But when it comes to just the best player, we can argue that I was the best player that they had. Just a pure player himself. When it comes to accolades, you know, there's a few guys that's in front of me.
Sure.
Yeah, we do the same thing at UCLA with BD, Baron Davis. He stayed 2 years. When you juxtapose his career next to some of the greats in UCLA history, right, the numbers necessarily don't stack up, but the impact goes well beyond. I put you in that same type of boat. 2 years in Zona, like, you were one of the coldest killers that our conference had ever seen, college basketball had ever seen. But it was lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, but when you talk about, like, the history of Arizona, you got, you know, Luke Walton. You're talking about Jason Gardner. You know, Richard stayed 3 years.
Yeah, Sean Elliott.
He donated to the school, so obviously.
All right. He's going to get love. He's going to get that love.
He was option four on the team. You know what I mean? You know, a nice little check boosts you back to one. So we had fun. You know, we're in good communications. We're on a group chain also. So all the alumni, we have our own little, you know.
That's dope.
A little line of communication, which is always fun, especially when Damon Stoudemire enters, because, like, whenever we get the brag and he trumps everybody in the things that he was the NIL before NIL.
OG.
He lets us know.
Yes, sir. Did Arizona have it cracking like that? We had it cracking at UCLA a little bit.
Arizona had it cracking. Arizona had it cracking, bro.
Were you guys well taken care of down in Tucson, Gil?
Yeah. Hey, listen. I thought the little cars and little speakers we got was like elite. And when Damon talks, it's a whole nother level of
being moved different.
He was maximizing his talents. Let me just put it that way, man. So I should have probably started with this, but your son, Elijah, I mean, everything's okay. Give us the update on him.
Yeah, you know, he was fortunate. It's you know, I can talk about it with smiles, you know. It came out of, you know, nowhere. I was actually up working out waiting for him, because I'm usually up 4:30 in the morning. So, you know, I look at my app, the Tesla app, to see if he's on his way home, because usually he'll work out, you know, come home, and then I give him about like 45 minutes, hour to take his nap, and then I wake him up for school. So, you know, I'm looking at the app, there's, you know, nothing with it, right? And then I found out by his sister that he got an accident because of his girlfriend has the live view, whatever it is, on his phone. So she got an alert that there was an accident. So, you know, that was a big, big, big scare. But, you know, when I talk to the doctor, like, you know, everybody else is, you know, worried. I'm talking to the doctor. I'm getting, so is anything broken?
Right.
Any head trauma, chest trauma, is, you know, what's going on? Like, no, I don't look like he got anything. We're inducing him because he was stronger than we thought he was, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have any manpower when he wakes up going crazy, because his last memory is fire, right? You know, flying out of the car, you know, he's, you know, saying he's trying to open the windows, the car automatically locked on him. You know, and, you know, not to bash, you know, the vehicle, you know, I'm not one of those type of people, but, you know, there needs to be some updated safety measures with that car. I wouldn't put anybody at a certain weight class in that car, youth in that car, because when it malfunctions, instead of releasing the windows and doors, it locks itself.
Wow.
Right. And you're talking about high school kids. They can't break damn near. It's not bulletproof, but it's if you ain't 250 proof, I can tell you that for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's saying he's trying to kick the window through. He's on the phone with 911 saying he's stuck in the car. He can't get out.
Wow.
You know, he's trying to break it. He's trying to do everything. He just couldn't. Fortunately, you know, he kind of had the window cracked enough for civilians to help him pull it open. So, you know, bystanders, you know, kind of saved his life.
That's good.
But he's back training, but the protocol was just to get the smoke out of his lungs. You know, that's what the real scare was, just, you know, making sure that smoke was out of his lungs. But, you know, I told him, man, that if you wasn't a good human being, like a real genuine good human being, you wouldn't have made it out of there. Because, you know, the fact that, cause I guess what happened was the car itself, it malfunctioned. It locked it, the wheel locked, and then just it limped, and then he ran right into a fire hydrant, wow. which the fire hydrant slowed him down. So when he hit the tree, right? So he hits the tree, and then when the fire catches, the water is kind of keeping the car cool.
No.
Right. Wow.
And then
wow.
the fact that he had the window crack helped some of the people get out of there and for people to kind of open it. Because if there was no fire hydrant, he probably would have hit the tree a little bit harder. If there was no, if the window wasn't cracked, you know, he wouldn't have got out.
Yeah.
To this day, it still hasn't updated that there was ever a crash, never alerted me that he was ever on the road, just for as a parent, you know, because I can't go off of something that didn't happen. Right. Yeah. He did make it out alive.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, moving forward, you know, parents get a hammer, get something in the car. That if it happens to your child, they can get out. Get one of the window piercers because the window is proven not to break.
Yeah.
So you're going to need something because if your child can't get out of a car, it's a death trap.
Well, I mean, it sounds like Elon Musk might be in store to lose a little bit more money. Are you a litigious person? Are you going to follow up with that? Or are you the kind of guy like, as long as my son is okay, yeah, let's put it
behind you? You know what I mean? I'm one of those, man. I'm not in here to take money from people, you know, the intentions of, you know, all I can think about his safety.
Right.
He's safe. The what if factor is not a thing, right? Yeah. It's, you know, I'm not one of those. It's like, he's safe. He gets to continue his career. This is, you know, it's a wake up call for him and, you know, sleep patterns late night. Like I used to talk to him like, yo, driving 3-4 in the morning, you know, like, what happens if you ever got an accident?
Yeah. Wow.
You're lucky I'm one of those people that's up that early.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. But if people aren't up that early, right, if, you know, anything can happen, right? So it was, I look at it like it's a awakening just for who you are as a person. But, you know, because you are a type of person that shakes everybody's hand, right, making sure everyone's okay. Like if you see a bum on the street, you're gonna make sure he's okay because you're that person. Yeah, you know, the basketball gods.
Right. Yeah,
saved your life. So
yeah.
You know, he's been tuned in ever since.
Yeah, that's a good thing, man. And so my best friend in life is the son of Maxine Waters, Ed Waters, best friend since the seventh grade. He's the current coach at Crenshaw High School. Played with me at Crenshaw. He coached against Elijah when he was I think at least 2 years, a junior. Yeah, but he's the first one to kind of put him on my radar. Like, man, have you seen Arenas and stuff? Like, a little bit. But you got to be, how proud are you? USC, what he's, McDonald's All-American, all the things that he's, man, his development. And I love, Gil, your approach is like, I'm not going to put him in a powerhouse Sierra Canyon situation where he's going to be a third or fourth option as a freshman. We're coming in hot. We're coming in hot where he's getting the basketball. You're doing the same thing with your daughter out of Notre Dame. But talk about Elijah and where he started from, where he is now, and your feelings about that.
Yeah, you know, when I did the research on, you know, these super teams, right, winning, because there was enough data, I can see the results. Where are these kids? How do they fare in college? And then the next level, who are they in the NBA? And that final chapter, what the research shows is all these five-star guys, when they're grouping up as freshmen, trying to win championships, when they get to that next level, what they are role players.
Mm.
They became the perfect role players. None of them ever became the lion.
Yeah.
Right? Because they never had to. They always did group project type of training, playing, right? We're beating a team by 35. So we've never had to really go hard in the development of selfishness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? You're freshman through senior. That's when you're supposed to be individually selfish. So you know how to take over and how to play team basketball when you get to college, right? So once I started doing that, then I started saying, all right, Zion is new. What kind of team did Zion? John Morant, Curry. I started looking at the superstars, and then I backtracked of their development. And it was the same as before. You go to your own team, develop a bunch of tools that'll help you become a megastar. Then when you get other players on your team, you know how to drop what you don't need.
Right.
But you need to build, you know, you need to build your armor. You got to rebound. You got to, you know, you got to pass the ball. You got to hit the game winner. You got to defend. You got to break the press. You got to guard the best guy. You got to get in foul trouble, stay out of foul trouble. But you learn how to play and become an animal.
Yeah.
And I remember when I seen Crenshaw the first game, I called him and I said, this is going to probably be one of the hardest games you play in your high school career. Game one. He was like, why? I said, because you're playing literally one against a team. They're going to trap you. They're going to rover you. They're going to beat you up. They're going to body slam you. If you think you're in shape, you're going to realize what you need to do. This man called me after. He said, yo, what the hell was that? He said, what was that? He said, they beat me up. They trapped. He said, it was the most frustrating 18 points he's ever had.
Shout out, baby.
I said, that's why you're there.
Yeah.
You're at the school you are at because of teams like that. See, people think super teams help you win. No, teams like Crenshaw helps you get better.
Yeah.
Because you got to break their press. Then you got to have enough energy to score. Then you got to defend them. You got to start. Like, that's what you're there for, to understand how to be a full-blown lion full of hyenas. Mm. And you got to be able to stand on your own.
Yeah.
That, and he said, yeah, I need to get on the track and I need to get in shape.
Yeah.
He said, because that's what's going to happen all year long.
Yeah. Gil, I was curious about Elijah's development in the early stages, because he has, to me, when I see him play, he has one of the most unorthodox games I've ever seen for a guy that size and the way he handles the ball. How much skill work versus 3-on-3 or 5-on-5 or live action play? How did you balance skills and actually throwing him into the fire, getting him that burn, that run, that good bump when he was growing up?
Yeah, so he started round 10. So he didn't really understand basketball or knew anything till about 12. But because I always had basketballs around the house, I used to just dribble when he was little. So what happens is he knew how to dribble the basketball, didn't know what basketball was, right? Mm-hmm. So he started off as a soccer player. And when he got into basketball, I was teaching him footwork. Right? Foot placement, understanding, you know, where his feet go. And somebody was like, yo, is this your son? I remember Daryl, the coach from Cavs, was like, yo, you have a son by the name of Elijah? He's in my program. I was like, yeah. He's like, yo, are you sure this is your son? He's trash. And I was like, yeah, he doesn't know how to play basketball. Right? But he picks up everything fast. So, you know, just, you know, work with him a little bit. And then once he started, like, liking the sport, full blown. Right. Then it was basically, yo, we're not shooting threes. You don't shoot threes. Right. You're going to learn because he was a skinny framed kid.
Yeah.
You sitting there chucking the ball. So under the free throw line is your bread and butter. So he was probably about 14. So for at least 2 years, I wasn't letting them just fire up threes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From there, it was just movement. Then it was training like pros. This is how pros are training. Right. And it was always playing up. So even when he was 12, he was playing 13U. Mm-hmm. When he was 13 and he became, like, you know, decent player, you're playing 15U's.
Yeah.
So before he even got into high school, he was already playing against JV and varsity players.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of helped him, taking him to the parks, right? Playing with adults, right? You know, people don't know what he wasn't ranked early because he wasn't playing AAU. He was playing adult league and playing at the adult parks.
Wow.
And that was really the key. I just went back to old school and say, wait a minute.
Yep.
It's no different. Let him go play against the adults. Let him go play against the bigger kids so he can feel that he don't have an advantage. Makes him play 100% every time because he doesn't have an advantage against these kids. Yeah. Nobody. He is the weakest person on the court at all times.
Yeah. So listen, man, talk about inspiring young players. I just read something that Damian Lillard, Milwaukee Buck, that you were his favorite player when he was in high school. He modeled his game after you. I guess he saw you play when your early stages of your career when you're with the Warriors up in Oakland, man. How does it feel, man, to be the inspiration for this younger generation of guards in the NBA?
Man, it's the inspiration of the inspiration, man, right? Where, you know, you start to do something just like you, right? You inspired MJ. MJ inspired others, right? There's always someone that inspires someone to keep it moving, right? So me with the zero in my journey, right, inspired, you know, the guys like Dame, Westbrook, and those guys are aspiring, right?
Yeah.
The Hollies and, you know, the guys that we have now. But it's just the work ethic, the style of play, and being really true to yourself and the confidence, right? So when you see the guys with these zeros, one thing they do have is what? Confidence in themselves.
Yeah.
Right? That's the zero is the guy who really truly believes in his craft when no one else does, right? Right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't one of those guys everyone really believed in. I had to earn all my stripes, right? Westbrook, same thing, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Dame in Blazers, right? Same thing. Halle, overrated. It's the same. Wow. That the symbol is what it is. It's self-belief. And every step of the way, those guys that's wearing that number, you're like, Jesus Christ, they all have the same pattern.
Yeah.
Right? No one believes in what they're doing, right? But they always seem to shine when you need them to. That, like yesterday, I got on the Westbrook jersey. Like game one, I got on the Westbrook jersey to then throw on Holly because I knew his belief in his shot. So I already knew what time it was. I already knew it was game time, right? So I went from zero to zero. Let's go.
Oh, man. And I never thought about it like that, like in terms of just standing on the shoulders of greatness, you know, in terms of Dame idolized you. Tyrese Haliburton has said publicly that Dame was his favorite player, that he idolized him as a player, man. And so, God, that's the beautiful thing about sport, about basketball in particular. You know, I'm a guy, I go back to Elgin Baylor and pretended I was Elgin on the playgrounds, and then it was Dr. J, and then all of a sudden Michael Jordan talks about, you know, I was his favorite player when he was, you know, people don't understand that kind of connection on that elite level. Man, that elite level is something that drives us, keeps us going. Right, Chris? I mean, I'm trying to remember who your guys were. Grant Hill, guys like that, Chris, when you came up. But that's the beautiful thing about basketball, man, is that connection that we have with each other.
Yeah, man. And it's a great connection. Gil, that brings up something I was thinking about. So now when you have this role, right, this legacy in basketball, and then you go on a couple of days ago and you said some things about Cat that weren't received very well by the general public. Do you feel the responsibility to measure those type of sentiments? Because you later came, you know, they brought you back on the show. You kind of backtracked, but not really. Mm-hmm. What do you feel about just the public sentiment about your statements? And do you feel like you have a responsibility not to kind of go there, or what people consider crossing the line?
You know, I think sometimes I do a great job at, like, taking something that is actually a real fact and making it unbelievable to the point where you're not really paying attention to what I'm saying, but how I'm saying it. Remember, what do people say about Cat himself? But you're talking about him in a way that's not respectful anyway. I just add the body look to it. And everyone's like, wait, what do you mean? Right? So what happens is this. I get the topics, right? I see a regular topic.
Yep.
This is what people don't understand about me. I take a regular topic. The New York Knicks they had their frustrations with Cat's defense. Ooh, little slow-footed and big feet. Ooh, bad hips. So I Google. I'm on Google looking at Cat. I'm like, I'm just going to make this. I'm going to tell you the truth of what he is, but I'm going to do it in a funny, joking way that's going to make a splash, right? And I know what people get irritated about. Yeah. So all I do is just say, well, hey, hold on. You don't need to get on him about his defense. It's not his fault. Yeah. It's not his fault. All right? He has so many hips, right? He got the towel-bearing hips, right? You know that. Right? You know what I mean? He has Bigfoot. You know, he has Mary J. Blige knees.
Wow.
I'm just adding the extra in it just for the splash. But in the realness, the proportion of his body, there's just certain people he can't keep up with, especially with, you know, him gaining more weight, right? You're trying to keep up with Giannis in that powerful frame. You have to be built a certain way, right? You know, you can't be built like muffin top, right? You got little legs, big top. It's just that's just your body frame. Hey. Same thing with Luka. Same thing with Jokic, right?
Yeah.
It's just certain body styles that just doesn't allow you to move left to right or front to back. Offensively, it kind of helps him because if you're overly athletic, he can use your speed against you. That's what Luka does.
Yeah.
That's what Jokic does, right? Yeah. You're trying to beat him to the spot and he knows it, so he knows how to spin off of those movements, right? So we're just really understanding, like, it's not like I'm just saying it. I Googled him, right?
I appreciate it. I appreciate your method to your method. You know,
frame, understanding, you know, the body and how the body moves and realize, you know, it's just saying.
People just take it so personally. I guess, you know, it's just the history of controversial takes that people just lump this one right into all the rest. But hey, I don't have a dog in the fight. I was just curious, man. I'm glad you gave us that introspection because I didn't realize you were, you know, that's your thought process behind the whole scenario.
Even with this, if, you know, because, you know, I have two daughters that play. So, you know, girls basketball, they have this bad habit. Well, I think it's a bad habit because, you know, as a righty, we're taught to pivot on our left foot and we have our right foot as our jab foot.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, girls basketball are on their right foot jabbing with their left foot, right? Like they're lefties.
Mm-hmm.
He does that,
mm-hmm.
right? He does the same thing. He's on his right foot jabbing with his left foot.
Stands to reason. Yeah, like, stands to reason.
You don't really, you can't blow by anybody, right? You're on the wrong pivot foot. So I'm like, oh, WNBA, right? So that's where all of that comes in. And it comes into the research, and then I just paint the picture.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just give it a funny take, you know, we're still being kind of, you know, factual about it, but I know no one's going to care about the fact.
It leads me into this next topic of conversation as we switch reels, as Brad Pye Jr. used to say in L.A. You had in your mind, and people that knew your talent coming out of college, lottery pick, you slipped to the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly, you had an interview. Now, I read somewhere, it was GMs or somewhere, when they asked you what was your ultimate whatever, something about being an international pimp. I don't know where that conversation came out. But would you do anything differently in terms of taking that process, I don't know, more serious is a term that enters your mind at all. But what was your mindset and that caused you to maybe slip to the second round because of the pre-draft kind of process?
See, now that's a hard question because I know the results. Right?
Well, the results are good. No, ultimately,
I wouldn't do nothing different because I slipped in the second round, so I got hit in the head early. But that. Me going in the second round, I got them a contract faster.
Right,
before anybody in the first round. Wow. So because I know the results, I get to say, yeah, I'm going to keep doing the same thing. Now, when you're coming into this market of the next level, right, you think it's about basketball itself. So Chicago, we're working out, right? The players I see, these are the players, these are my competitors. This is the wild, wild. This is the open field. This is the jungle, right? So we're here fighting for our lives, right? I'm making a name for myself amongst my peers, right? I take no I'm coming at your head. I'm trying to tear your head off. I don't care if it's lifting weights. Yeah. I don't care if it's max jump. agility drill or the 101, 202. I took all that shit serious.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I remember the first incident that I bumped heads with this idea of a combine. It was the treadmill stress test.
Yes.
I got ready for this. I've been running at UCLA all goddamn summer. Right? I'm putting people 50 yards in front of me to run the 200, right? Yep. Just so I have the max out. I'm running 5 miles. I'm doing the bleachers. That's where I met Norm Nixon out there. Oh man, Norm. Right? I'm getting in peak.
Yeah.
To go there, get this treadmill test, and they say, so I asked first question, so what's the top time? Right? In my mind, I'm ready to do 1 hour, 32 hours on this thing. And they said 18 minutes. And to me, I'm like, that's awesome. What did is 18 minutes. Oh my God. And they were like, no, you just go to 18 minutes and it stops. Wait, so just 18 minutes, that's it? So everything, like, how do they know who's in shape? How do they know who's elite? How do they know who has willpower to go through pain? Like, if we just all get to stop at 18, how do you know if someone is not looking at this and say, okay, I want to give up, but my willpower takes over and I got to do another 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This test does not do it.
Yeah.
There's a flaw in the system. 3 minutes, 18. It doesn't matter at this point. So I'm like, I don't want to do it. Right. So I put on my Chuck Taylors and then I'm going. I put my basketball shoes down, you know, and now I'm doing it in Chucks. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to crease my Chucks up.
Well, you ran in Chucks. You ran in Chucks.
It was no longer serious.
High top Chucks, Gil.
Yeah, no. The casual Chucks.
Because I used to bend them. Okay. And the sides, right? So I'm like, the idea of willpower being broke and the ultimate competitor is gone out of this element. There's no means nothing. So why take this seriously?
Yeah.
So that alone I was done off of.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my comments was, we're doing it was the seminar. Now, I don't know if I'm the only person who did this, but I don't know who taught me this, but they said, look, to really sniff out who's who, you put them all in the room. Where they sit kind of lets you know who's good, who's not, who's talented. He said the front row is people who's looking for validation, they want to be seen. It's, hey, I'm here. Look at me. I'm proud. Those are not confident in their skill, right? Those are goody two-shoes. Those are here's my apple, right? Middle of the road type of mindsets, right? C's trying to pretend they're A's. Your gifted sits in the back, right? The gifted and the lazy, they sit in the back. The person who, whatever y'all talking about, I don't care. I don't fear anything. Everybody I see is in front of me. So your most skilled or naturally gifted people will probably be in the back, right? That's mine. You're talking about the Elon Musk. Those, they're going to be in the back because what y'all talking about has nothing to do with them. Now, the most dangerous is the middle, right? Your wolves are in the middle, right? Those are the guys who's trying to blend in. Right? They don't want to be in the front. They don't want to be in the back, right? Those are the ones that can walk in the middle of a sheep pile and they done ate everybody up before you even noticed them, right? So when I said, I'm looking at who's who, asking, hey, man, who is that dude right there, right? So what I wanted to do is this. You know, you have the Stanford guys and the guys in the front, of course, right? I had a trash, right? One of the twins got the mic and he's asking questions. So I already relate, hey, yo, tell twin, give me the mic. So twin was a Valley kid too, so we knew each other. So I said, I'm like, yo, I'm about to say I want to be a pimp, right? Richard Jefferson said, no, you're not, right? So I'm trying to gather, let's see what everyone does. So I yell out. Yeah. What was that question again? It's like, yeah, you know, so what are you trying to get out of being an NBA player. So it was something along those lines. And I said, I want to be a pimp. And then gave the mic back. I wanted to see in the middle who turns around to see who said it. Right? Because I know strong minds really don't give a fuck about who says anything. They're just going to keep forward. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They're not going to look behind them. They don't care. Right? So I'm trying to see, and the person that was kind of in the front that I was looking at was like the Joe Johnson. It was like Joe Johnson. It was someone else. It was like, you know, those guys. And I'm trying to figure out, because I don't know, I've never seen these people before, right? Because this is where everyone is. So all the number one, two picks, I didn't know who none of these guys were.
Yeah.
Because they're not the guys who was at the combine, right? This was the Rolls Royce. This was the red carpet type of people.
Yeah.
So this is the first time I'm seeing them. So I'm trying to gauge, right? And then a guy up there got really angry at that comment. Like, I guess, I mean, I'm sure it's a, you know, I guess he was serious about it. So he said, wait, excuse me, sir. So you're saying you want to, you know, what's the name? Women and this and this and this. And I'm like,
damn.
Okay. All right. So everybody's looking at me like, ooh. And I was like, you know what? So it's like, if I backtrack and just say I was just kidding, they're going to think I'm weak-minded. Right? If I double down, they're going to know I can't be broken. Mm. Right? No matter what kind of, this is authority here. Right? I won't be broken amongst my peers. They're going to think I'm crazy. So when it goes down to the game winners and stuff like that, this is their first introduction to me. So I said, yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm wrong. I don't want to be a pimp. I want to be an international pimp. And then everybody was like, oh. Like, yo, like, you know what I mean? And I was like, so now you got the Joe John, like, everybody in the front of me
now started
back at the double down. Like, who the double down in the middle of, you know what I mean? This is a serious thing. But I made the decision is like, I gotta let the peers know that, hey, listen, I take everything. I take everything and I go full. I'm a double downer.
Right.
I double down.
Do you think that contributed to you falling out the first round?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
That sucks. That's weak.
I got pushed in the second round because it's considered immature, not serious, right? Now, I just told you my process of why.
Super thoughtful, super insightful. Yes.
Because they don't know that.
Yeah.
They don't know what they were looking at.
Yeah. They're going surface. Yeah. They're going straight surface.
That's the problem with all of these combines.
Yeah.
The people who are sitting here looking, they do not know what they're looking at. They don't know what to look for.
Wow.
Right? When you're saying, all right, work out one by yourself, how do you know who he really is when he's put amongst another alpha male or a underdog dog?
Yeah.
How do you know what he will do? That's why you can't see Brunson coming.
Right.
Because Brunson only comes when he's being attacked. Right. If you're in a one-on-one element or by yourself element, you don't see him. You don't see a Draymond Green. You don't see a Jokic. You don't see a me. Right. So when you sit back and say, how the hell Jokic falls? Because when you take the surface look and you say, all right, by yourself, he looks slow running down. Right. He has no lift. Right. The element of basketball is not being applied to him for you to see his gifts.
Right. So in terms of the Bucks second rounders, Tyler Smith, Andre Jackson Jr., Chris Livingston, Ryan Rollins, Jericho Sims, Gary Trent Jr., one piece of advice you could give to those guys, do you approach it with a chip, with some resentment, with some anger? I mean, this modern basketball player, do you have to, you know, you have to change kind of that intense kind of an approach? How would you advise guys like that in terms of progressing in their careers at second round picks?
It's no different than the old stories of Michael Jordan, the old stories of Kobe Bryant, right? As elite as they was, they always felt that they was being
disrespected.
Even if the disrespect was created by themselves.
Well, Gil, I was college player of the year. My disrespect was that I couldn't shoot. Uh-huh. I remember doing a camp down in San Diego. Matt Calvin, great guard, he bought into that reputation. And so during a demonstration, Kiki Vandeweghe, some other great players, Johnny Nash down there, Kurt Rambis at this camp. I was at UCLA my senior year. These are high school guys. He brought me out there as an example of how not to develop your skills. He thought he was going to front me off, Gil, and have me shoot like, okay, Marcus, shoot some shots around the basket. It's important to be a good shooter. Okay, Marcus, come out here and shoot. I knocked down about 12 in a row, missed that 13th one. And he was like, wow, I heard you couldn't shoot. I was like, yeah, well, you heard wrong, you know. And so, but that disrespect, you know, that you're talking about, it can fuel you in a positive way.
Yeah, it's, man, when you're trying to level up, there's nothing normal about being an NBA player, right? The system during a season is not designed for you to get better. So you have to have your own program to get better. Everyone is the same during the summer. Everyone's working out two times a day, running the beach, eating right. Cool, right? Your advantage as a player is the season, because no one has dissected the season the way it should be. See, in the summer, we're all on diets, right? Trying to get ready for the season. We're all running. We're all playing at UCLA. We all have trainers, right? We're all like, you know, not drinking and whatever.
Right.
Right now, the season is the pitfall for a lot of players. So if you're a serious player and you're trying to get better, that's when you do it. Because what ends up happening is that's when all the drinking comes in, because they're traveling. See, wives and kids is not involved from city to city. So that's when the bad habits of an NBA player happen. That's when we go to Miami, I'm going out. Ooh, I've been locked down all summer. Yeah. So the late night, the partying, the gambling, right? I'm not taking the shot series. I'm only going practice, maybe get some shots in here. So if you stick to your summer program during the season, you can elevate faster.
Wow.
That's when you're at your most disciplined. So when I realized that my second year, or after my first year, like looking at everybody's bad habits, I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. If I put my 3-a-day program into this NBA season, wow, I can scale faster. Right. I'm only going to go out once a year. Right. Whoever party is going to be the best. That's all I'm going to. I'm not going out in Miami like that. I'm not going to New York. I'm not going out. I'm going to be disciplined at the workplace. If I want to party, I'm a party in the summer when I'm not on the clock.
Mm.
Right. So think about it, Marcus. We get wild while we're on the clock.
Yeah. And disciplined when it's time to relax.
Off the clock.
Yeah.
Discipline off the clock, getting ready. So because I understood that, I'm like, this is when I can, 3 times a day. So I can come in at 6 o'clock, work out, and then do team practice, right? Everybody's going to stay within that hour.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I'll stay with them too, just to make sure nobody's doing nothing more than me. Right. And then Chris Mullin told me this. Hey, try to work out around 5 to 7. He said, why? Is because you need your body used to producing at this time. This is your game time.
Yeah.
Right. Your game time is getting ready from 5 to 7. When 7 o'clock hits, start working out then. Right. Prepare at 5, work out at 7. So, you know, me, I'm not playing, but I never really grasped. And then when I started thinking about it, like, this is what time I get into the gym. This is what time the lights come on. So if my body is used to performing at this time, I wouldn't have to worry about, like, oh, man, one of these games. So I was always ready.
Yeah.
1 o'clock games killed me. Mm. Because 1 o'clock games is after practice, after we eat lunch, and I nap.
Yeah.
So naturally, my body wanted to shut down when we go to Toronto and we got to play that 1 o'clock, you know, afternoon game. My body just wanted to shut down because that was used to going to sleep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? So those are the games I kind of like had a falling off on, you know, I just couldn't get out of it. But you know, the, these guys that are trying to get better, they feel they're disrespectful. Create you a system during the season that has you scaling up.
Yeah.
Don't fall into the NBA model. Yeah, we play, we practice from this time. I might come back a little bit later. Will we go to Atlanta? Oh, let's go to the strip club. Oh, let's go to this chicken joint. No, no, you find your 24-hour fitness. Like there was no first bus.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the first bus was. Don't even know what it looked like. I knew yellow cabs. Right? After practice, I took a nap. Soon as practice was over, I went, took a nap. I woke up at 2:30 to 3 o'clock, and I was in a cab going to the gym.
Wow.
Right? Because I heard Kobe was at the gym at 3 o'clock.
Right.
And if Kobe's at the gym at 3 o'clock, that is my favorite player, and that's one of the best players in the league, then he must be on to something.
Right, right.
Right? So, you know, my second year when I realized, because I didn't know that until Luke Walton got to the Lakers, and I'm asking all these Kobe things. And he's telling me, like, yo, so is he on the first bus or the second bus? He's like,
he ain't on the bus. He said,
no, Kobe's already, by the time I get it, because I was like, you got to be on the first bus, right? He's like, yeah. I was like, is Kobe on that bus or is he on the second bus? He's like, nah, Kobe is at the gym around 3 o'clock.
Wow.
Got it. Everybody's at the. He's like, no, he's. I said, the rims are not even up then. He's like, yo, Kobe is at the gym at 3 o'clock. When I get their first bus, he's already done, showered, and, you know, he's basically resting and stretching and all that stuff. So I was like, all right, look, when we play you guys, I'm going to the gym at 3. I want to see this.
Yeah.
I went to the gym. I was there at 2:45. 3 o'clock, Kobe is walking into the gym. They tried to kick me out because they didn't know who I was. I'm like, oh, no, I played for the Golden State Warriors. I just got here a little bit early. I didn't know the protocol. So they was like, all right.
Yeah.
What I seen changed my whole career. I seen a man going through a workout like he was fighting for his life.
Wow.
The intensity of this was unreal. Like on the pump fake, like he's getting mad at a trainer because the trainer ain't jumping, and when the trainer jumps, he's not falling on him.
That's real. That's real though.
Yeah.
He got by him with the first jab and pulled up, and nobody was there. What the hell are you doing? Someone's gonna always be there. And I'm just like sitting there like 500, just 500, same movement, same intensity.
Yeah.
And that right there changed my workout. Like, I'm working out Chris Mullin. This was very different.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like, never seen it again. Like, I went my whole career, I'm there at 3 o'clock. Kobe was there every single time, even days he wasn't playing, right? The next closest thing was Ray Allen. Ray Allen was the closest person to come in consistently. So because I'm there every road trip, those were the two most consistent people I've ever seen there that early. Hmm. Not my team, them two.
Yeah.
Kobe and Ray Allen, LeBron James. And when LeBron came 2004, LeBron James.
Yeah. Next.
Sprinkle here and there, Steve Nash. So those are kind of like the four that, like when I think about, okay, I've seen them more than one time, those are the four through my whole career that was there, you know, early times.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Well, listen, man, before we wrap this up, I got a question kind of off the beaten path. So Giannis suggested to Adam Silver about the international versus the U.S. for the All-Star game. Now, but this is a different question. I first broached that subject to David Stern in an interview back in 2004. And David Stern was like, well, no, the game is international and it's just too much, you know, cross-pollination on teams. Anyway, so he pooped. But here's the question. So on my flight back to – that was in New York, Gil. My flight back to Los Angeles, I'm sitting in first class. It's empty. There's one lady to my right, a couple of aisles over. She beckons me to come over. I go over there. She tells me she's afraid of flying. And could I sit with her for this 5-hour flight? I'm kind of looking. I recognize her a little bit. I think she's maybe one of the Pointer Sisters. But I sit down, and it's Gail King. It's Gail King. So we sit down next to each other for 5 hours. She's listening to Josh Groban and giving me her headphones or whatever, checking out, you know, just a great conversation. Now, I'm like 2 years sober at the time. I don't really have my footing underneath me. She's inviting me to her birthday party, her 50th party in December.
You fumbled the bag.
So I told Chris about it. It's like, Dad, how come you? I was like, man, it was just way too much woman for me at that moment in time. Has there ever been a situation for you, man, where with a woman where you meet or you see or you interact with that you just felt like intimidated by?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, when you're talking about, you know, just some of these women that you watch on TV, like they're just superstardom, right?
Yep.
It's just like, even though you're a confident person because you in your, it's just like, oh, it catches you off guard. You know what I mean? It's like you didn't get the prep work for this.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? It's just one of those. Like, I mean, she was married, like Holly P. Robinson. Like, we caught our eyes. I don't know if it was a flirt or what, but I'm just sitting there just stuck like, man. Yeah.
Holly.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Caught me a few shit, Maya. It was a few where my manly wasn't manly.
So I'm not alone. All right, I just want to make sure I'm not alone in this. All right, and put a period on the story. Chris was working, doing some things with NBC, working on a pilot, and needed to put together an interview list. I called her, you know, cold call a few months later after I flew with her on the plane. And he flew out to New York. She sat down with him for 2 hours. He was just like, Dad, you blew it, Dad. You blew it. I was like, man, Gail was just a little bit too much woman for old boy back in those days, man. So, man. But look, man. Continued success in everything you do. You got it going on, man. Again, I appreciate you know, keeping my son gainfully employed, Josiah. But you guys do a great job. Kenyon, I mean, are you ever scared of Kenyon, man? He just seems like he's got a screw just I won't say loose, but not just totally tightened sometimes. Are you ever, you know, you ever worry about that,
no,
brother?
No. Listen, like, as rough as Kenyon is, you're talking about a guy who did go to college 4 years.
Yeah.
Right? He had Bob Huggins, right?
Right.
He thrived under Bob. Yeah. Right. So he understands his element, right? Yeah. He's with Jason Kidd. He's been a professional's professional. How he plays the game, right, is very different on off the court.
Right.
Right. Right. You know, Kenyon off the court is very different. When it's about basketball, right, just the element of basketball, the competitiveness, when the cameras is off, Kenyon is like one of, I'm not going to say soft because that's not the word you use.
Yeah, I got you.
He's going to barbecue, give you some slides. Like, is this, like, yeah, you know, I'm in the house gardening. You're going to come through. You're like, we're gardening. So he does have this softer side that you wouldn't expect, but it's a great balance for him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But we're not any type of competition for someone like Kenyon because he's really secure with, you know, his aggressiveness. So we don't even, like, we're little puppies to him.
Yeah.
Right. So he's going to bark and we back. He doesn't get offended by, you know.
Right. Whoever put that crew together, I mean, in terms of just, like you say, the balance and the disparity of opinions and it's just the conversation, man, is just always compelling. And that's why you guys, I think, are so successful. So.
And I also like to say that Gil, like, since being a day one watching the show, right, every single person on your panel has evolved as far as tightening his skill set, gotten dope with, you know, research or whatever it is. Every guy that I see on that panel is a completely different guy than I saw when you guys first started the show. And that's a compliment to you, a testament to y'all's show, Joe, everybody behind the scenes, man. It's truly one of the great shows of all time. I'm not just saying that. And I don't give out compliments very easily and lightly, and not because my brother on the show, but y'all really be having us like rolling, like laughing to levels that are just incomprehensible. Incomprehensible, bro. Trust me.
You know, we do a great job of information, questioning information, and entertainment.
Yeah.
Right? So no matter how much research I do, it's irrelevant to someone like Rashad McCants.
Yeah.
I love it.
You're right.
No matter what research I do, It's meaningless to people who have opinions.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a lot of society.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Right? So when I say, hey, Michael Jordan's the best because of this, 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 he erases it with, well, that's not my opinion. My opinion is Kobe Bryant's the best because, and then he'll name some stuff. Then we're like, all right, let's go back and forth. And no matter what you give, it's 10 toes down. He don't care. And that's a group. So no matter who you like on a couch, you're going to agree with someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the couch is never going to agree with each other.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's just the way it is. So it's a couch that's outsmarting each other, just like the barbershop.
Yeah.
100%. Right? You're trying to prove your points, and just some people are just like, I don't care what you're talking about.
No, you got
lost three times in the final, and no GOAT can lose that many times.
Facts.
Right? That's just the fun part of the show. And, you know, the fact that when we started the show, we didn't know what it was. We didn't know who we were. It's just this, all right, this is the concept. Let's start. We'll figure it out as we go. And that's the successful business model. If you have an idea, start it.
Yeah.
While you're going, it'll create itself. Right? If you think you're going to create a perfect show and then start it, and you think that show that you created perfectly is going to be the same show that you have, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? You have to get into it, start doing it, figure out what you're good at, what you're bad at, and then start developing these skills. And then it turns into the vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what this show is. Like, one thing I did know is Josiah has to be the host.
Yeah.
It's a skill that you either have or you don't.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Let it happen organically. Like being a ball player, you never know what you're going to need during the course of a game. So every game is a storyline into itself, you know, and it just kind of plays out before you. So that's a beautiful thing. Look,
and
man,
if you know how to do it, you know how to do it.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, "Yeah, you know, we need you to host like this." And I was like, "One thing I do know, I'm not a host.
Yeah.
I'm an entertainer. Mm. I stay in my lane." Right. Hosting is not my lane. Entertainment is my lane. Right. I let the host be host. I do not step on the shoes. I don't try to figure out what the rundown is. That's what you do. Yeah. Right. I'm going to irritate you a little bit just to fuck with you for the entertainment part. Yeah. And that's what usually happens sometimes. I think sometimes some people want to try to you hire someone to do something that they're good at. That's the reason. And then you try to tell them how to do their job. That's where the buck becomes the buck. And that's where people start falling off. Everyone has a job. Do it at your best ability. And that's how we work here. Yes, if you're the point guard, be the point guard. I'm be the shooting guard.
Yes, sir.
The day I try to do your job is when I lose mine.
Yep. Dominate your lane.
Dominate your lane.
Look, man. We're out of here. We appreciate you so much, man. And again, continued success. And please come back and join us whenever you can, man. We appreciate you.
All right. Anytime, man.
Gilbert Arenas, No Chill Gil, here on the Here District.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.